Well, it's the Great Debates
podcast,
radio program, media program.
I think of it as just the Great Debates.
It's just the Great Debates. It's just the plain and simple. It's the Great Debates.
It should just be the Great Debates.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's start over. It's the Great Debates.
Yeah, great.
Agreed?
Yeah, agreed.
Welcome.
Let's jump.
Welcome. I'm ready to jump. I have a topic. Guys, it's the holiday season.
Wait, I'm clear. What kind of jumping are we going to do?
Right into it.
Into a micro.
A micro.
Yeah.
We're going to jump right into a micro. But before we do, just to kind of create some thematic context.
Oh, I'm ready to jump.
It's the holidays. We're going to do some holiday debates. Micro debate, 3 minutes on the clock. Sure. Steve Healy, taking the pro, Mrs. Claus and Santa are still physically intimate.
I'm Steve Healy. I'm taking the pro. Whenever you see a picture of Santa or Mrs. Claus, they are smiling. Santa, the one thing we know about him is that he's jolly. And Mrs. Claus always has a big smile on her face. And that is a smile of satisfaction and contentment. It's the satisfaction a woman only has when she's been receiving enough physical love from a guy like Santa, who's got the big beard, very sensual guy. He's got some style to him. He has a busy, hardworking job. He's strong, muscular, no doubt, under some fat. He gets intimate with Mrs. Claus. On December 26th, those two go at it.
The smile on their face, the deep-seated happiness that both of the Clauses are portrayed to have, doesn't come from the physical love they share. It comes from the deeper understanding that they share, that there is no joy greater than giving children gifts, than helping parents deliver to their children. I don't even know what the rules of Santa Claus are. Is he helping the parents, or is he just doing
it? No, he does.
So what greater philanthropic effort is there? You know what? It's akin to the smile that I would say Bill and Melinda Gates wear when they have pledged all of their money away because they know that they're taking part in something much bigger.
I am not going to be drawn into a debate with you about whether Bill and Melinda Gates are physically intimate.
I'm
totally different.
I wasn't trying to do that. You're trying to create a straw man argument that doesn't exist. Let me add also, it's freezing up there. They're basically hibernating most of the year. I don't even know how they're subsisting in the North Pole.
That is an argument for me, because when they get together and cuddle in bed, no matter how much heaters they have, how thick their blankets are, they are cuddling for warmth. They live at the North Pole.
It's miserable there. But that doesn't lead itself to having physical relations. It leads yourself to like bundling up, conserving your resources. I'll also say there's no evidence that they have children, which to me suggests that they might never have been physically intimate. I don't think there's protection up at the North Pole. So how did they go all these years being physically intimate? No kids. All these elves popped up out of nowhere.
I'm not going to question or explore their choice or non-choice to have children. That's none of my business. What I do
but
know
you understand
is
you understand the logistic question it raises. Are you saying that they were using some sort of non-prophylactic birth control?
I'm saying we don't know the medical details of either Santa or Mrs. Claus. There could be a million reasons why they don't have children. Maybe they just decided not to have children. They could be using the method. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not going to speculate on that. What I am going to say is that these are a couple that's been married for a long time.
How do you know they're married?
In a cold place. Because her name is Mrs. Claus.
Okay.
She has his name and she's Mrs.
You know, actually, it's interesting. There's no reason to believe they're not actually brother and sister. Why do we assume that they're a married couple? I guess because she's Mrs. Claus. The Mrs. part?
Dino.
I still don't know how to say
it. Man,
what'd you think of the debate?
Well, I was sort of taken with Healy's opening statement.
Mm.
I
know. Dave's giving a look. You think Medina's biased lately?
I'm biased.
I think since the first episode, Medina's just like just has a personal Healy bias.
I don't think so. I disagree.
I hate to be a grump about but
like, let's have some listeners write in and just tell us, like, were you not taken with the argument about Santa's, you know, the muscles under the fat? The smiling faces.
Also
Dave, what you left on the table, I thought, was that these people are older than
that was Bob. Obvious.
I mean,
me. I mean, we know that.
Don't run from the obvious arguments.
Exactly.
Sometimes right. they're quite strong. If you're listening, by the way, and you come across a picture of Mrs. Claus anywhere in a store display, anything, please send it to us. Tweet yes. it to us.
Great
email
idea.
It to us. Wait, I want a collection.
Why?
Because I want when listeners see the smile on her face, they're gonna know that that's a smile of sexual contentment.
But you can just. Google image search Mrs. Claus.
No, because actually, I think there will be kids display things that we don't have access to.
Run into trouble here because there's all sorts of like Playboy cartoons of Mrs. Claus.
No Playboy cartoons.
Okay,
that's off limits. I want like displays from your local church store or whatever.
School. I will say, Davis, that I found the argument about Bill and Melinda Gates to be compelling.
Okay, so who won?
I mean, Healy won.
It's absurd. At this point, it's absurd.
I don't think I'm going to let you win anymore, ever, and see
that's
what it develops out of that.
I've never questioned the integrity of the moderator,
yeah,
by the way.
No kidding. Why? You have no reason to.
That's totally untrue. Well, the integrity, no, but the call,
the
yes.
wisdom, sure.
Yeah, the wisdom.
Guys, are we into host chat?
Yeah, we're in host chat. We're in host chat. We're having Diane Keaton's.
I've been thinking of... transitioning host chat into something called fun and games, making it a little more active than just chat.
Mm-hmm.
Have you? Okay. I mean,
I've actually prepared a game here today.
A game? I love the Great Debates game.
I generally like games.
This game is sort of a portmanteau combination of two very popular Great Debates games.
Okay.
And I'm really excited about it.
You're listening to the Great Debates.
Dave, you're going to be on the spot today. But I think it's a challenge you're going to really rise to.
Okay.
As you know, we often play presidential challenge.
Yeah, I like that.
Where I give you some sort of presidential situations and you have to react. We also sometimes play a game called Tough Impressions.
Okay.
Where I give you a really challenging impression to try and do.
Yeah. Famously, Wayne Gretzky came up and I nailed it.
Nailed it.
Well, you did pretty well.
I think the consensus was that Dave nailed it.
We're going to play.
Throw me a bone here, man.
Okay.
All right.
We are going to play presidential tough impressions.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
So what I have is I've prepared some audio clips of some presidents talking.
Oh, you dog.
These are all 20th century presidents.
Mm-hmm. They're all 20th century presidents.
Okay. Yeah, because, I mean, they had to be from the time of audio recording.
I understand.
I'm going to give you the text of them talking.
Okay.
And you do your best, and then we'll listen to the real life example and see how you did.
You're going to give me the text, and then I'm going to try to do an impression of that, and then we'll see how we did.
Correct.
Okay. Gotcha.
First president up.
Yeah.
Theodore Roosevelt.
Mm. Oh, God. I have no idea what he sounds like.
Give it a swing.
Here we
have
go.
Have some fun.
Oh, I've never heard a recording of Theodore Roosevelt.
There are the lines.
So, Healy, you just handed me a piece of paper, and I'm supposed to read this as Theodore
Correct.
Roosevelt.
Correct. And this is, by the way, the easy one, just to sort of get you started.
The great fundamental issue now before our people can be stated briefly. It is, are the American people fit to govern themselves, to rule themselves, to control themselves? I believe they are. My opponents do not. I believe in the right of the people to rule. I believe the majority of the plain people of the United States will, day in and day out, make fewer mistakes in governing themselves than any smaller class or body of men, no matter what their training will make in trying to govern them. I believe, again, that the American people are, as a whole, capable of self-control and of learning by their mistakes.
Wow, fantastic.
I mean, a round of applause. That was terrific. Dan, can we hear Theodore Roosevelt?
Let's listen to this clip that we have here.
The great fundamental issue now before our people can be stated briefly. It is, are the American people fit to govern themselves, to rule themselves, to control themselves? I believe they are. My opponents do not.
Why don't we stop there,
Dan?
Okay.
What do you think?
I think I did pretty poorly.
I think you did great.
I think I captured something about
the
time.
Yeah.
Of
the cadence.
The cadence.
And you had a little bit of the sort of North Atlantic aristocrat accent.
Mm-hmm. Certainly, I was picturing more rousing. I'm picturing him outside at Buffalo speaking the winds. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He may have been, more restrained than usual for the purpose of the recording.
Right.
The old time recording had to be kind of clear and.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Could accommodate less dynamic range.
But anyway, pretty neat, right?
Okay, that was cool.
Are you ready
I thought that
for
was fantastic.
Another tough
I'm giving
impression.
Dave the win on that.
Great. Yeah, I think you should.
All right. Yeah.
It's
thank you.
It's getting tough, unfortunately.
It started with Theodore. That was the easy one.
We are going to do President Calvin Coolidge.
I mean, who has any idea what Calvin Coolidge sounds like?
Give us your impression of Calvin Coolidge, if you would.
Healy is handing me this piece of paper. I'm reading it for the first time. Now, here's all I know about Calvin Coolidge, yeah, is that he was called Silent Cal.
Yeah.
But I don't believe that had much to do with his speaking voice.
He did talk sometimes, for instance, at his first inaugural, which you're about to read.
Oh, this is from his first inaugural. Yeah. Okay, here we go. No one could contemplate current conditions without finding much that is satisfying and still more that is encouraging. Our own country is leading the world in the general readjustment to the results of the great conflict. Many of its burdens will bear heavily upon us for years, and the secondary and indirect effects we must expect to experience for some time.
Wow. Again, great job.
I don't know what I'm just picking a voice and going.
I just thought that was really strong. I think listeners are actually going to agree that you're a better Calvin Coolidge than Calvin Coolidge himself.
See, that's I think what we're getting, and yeah. I feel the same way kind of about Teddy Roosevelt.
Let's hear the clip.
Current okay. condition, without this is the real finding Calvin. Much that is satisfying, and still more that is encouraging. Our country is leading the world in the general readjustment to the results of the great conflict.
I mean, was this guy trying to bore us to death?
Boring
as can be.
Sounds boring, old.
Yeah, but I think that's like what people were craving at the time.
Kind of a old lilting man Potter. Quality.
Yeah, I think it was after World War One, and people were like, just get us a boring old guy. Okay, this one is going to be, this is the last one, the third one, and okay. It's going to be a lot more dynamic. This is from a clip of President Nixon after he was out of office.
Okay.
And he's being interviewed by Pat Buchanan.
Oh.
And it was caught just sort of like them chatting during the commercial break. So I'm going to hand this to you. And you can prep for a second. And I'll set you up by asking the question Nixon answers there. First, okay. First, what happens is there's two pieces. We're just going to worry about the top piece.
Okay.
What happens is Nixon says that a new book just came out about LBJ, and Buchanan says, "Oh, are you talking about George Reedy's book?" And here's what Nixon says:
"No, Carroll book. Oh, it gets rave review from Clifton Chatham in Book of the Month. Unbelievable shit! It makes him sound like a goddamn animal. Of course he was. He was a man."
Amazing! Dave scores
good.
Again.
Very good.
Let's hear the clip. Hear the clip.
Oh, I know it by George Reedy. It. Did you read? Is it Reedy's book?
No.
Oh no, this
no,
new Carroll
book. Book.
Yeah.
It gets a rave review from Clifton Chatham in the Book of the Month. Unbelievable.
Stand mm-hmm. by.
Shit! It makes him appear like a goddamn animal.
Mm-hmm.
Quiet.
Of course he was.
I mean,
that's great. Dave, you did a great job.
Nailed it.
I guess.
You nailed
know.
The mood. You nailed the goddamn
animal.
He was, and you get the animal. Respect in there, too. He was a man.
Yeah, what does that mean? So it's like begrudging respect from Nixon.
Later in the interview, Nixon says the three best politicians of the 20th century were Teddy Roosevelt, Franklin Roosevelt, and Lyndon Johnson.
No kidding.
Yeah. As political operators, he says.
Interesting.
Anyway, great job on a tough game.
Well
congratulations.
Done,
great game. That was fun.
Hey, you know, if you want to play at home, let us know how it goes.
I've got another debate.
Great.
Oh, let's go.
And we're going to do another 3 minute, if that's okay. That's
sure.
Fine with me.
Steve Healy taking the pro on the holiday theme.
Mm-hmm.
Gifts are a good idea.
I'm Steve Healy. I'm taking the pro. Look. Gifts are economically wasteful and inefficient, no question. Most gifts are something somebody doesn't really want, but on the other hand, it's a way to express affection. It's a love language that a lot of people speak in, and when you really get someone a nice, tasteful gift, it's really moving and powerful, and as they say, it's the thought that counts. Like the physical expression of the thought, I care about you, I spent some time thinking about you, I spent some resources getting you something that I thought you would enjoy, is great. And it's a really nice, cheerful thing. The word gift in English summons up some of the best, most joyful kinds of experiences we can possibly have. When somebody does a great artistic work or something, we say, this is a gift. They've given us a gift with this. And that always is a word with positive connotations. Gifts are good.
Well, just because the word has positive connotations doesn't mean that the thing itself is always good. Yes, when someone produces a work of art, we say, yes, this is a gift that they've given to us, but that doesn't mean that the literal tangible gifts are that we're, I assume we're talking about in this, in a sort of holiday commerce tradition, are good. Look, as you said, they're economically wasteful. And most importantly, they are part of the virus that is consumerism in this country. And you can laugh at my, you know, lefty pinko ideas out here. But I think that it's a, certainly a reasonable argument that we are overly focused both, well, maybe not necessarily economically, but as a society, we are overly focused on things and goods and owning things. And there is no evidence that the more you own, the happier you become. Now, can a gift in some way make someone happy because it represents a sort of like aspect of their relationship? Oh, I put thought into this. Yes, of course, but so too can literally hundreds of thousands of other ways that you can show someone that you care about them. I happen to believe to a certain extent in the theory of love languages, and I believe that love also exists between friends and the people who you would give gifts to. And what we learn from the theory of love languages, which I don't think is like exact or like accurate to a T, but part of the idea is that for some people, gifts and gift giving is very important. It's their dominant love language. But that's only true for a very small minority of the population. For most people, it's either physical affection or tasks and service or quality time spent, or I forget the fifth one. What this means is that the idea, like, we're really catering towards a small number of people by making this very important gift giving thing. Also, there's so much waste built in. The amount of gift cards that are given that don't get spent, the amount of gifts that get re-gifted that get thrown away. It's a bad idea.
When I look around my house, I can see gifts and I feel thoughts of warmth.
Oh. Let's keep going. Can we go another minute on
this?
Let's
go another
minute. I can see a bowl Dan Graney gave to me. I can see some records my parents gave me. I can see some Great Debates pillows, which I myself intend to give to some people as gifts. Uh-huh. I see beautiful, fun memories. I see some paintings that weren't a gift exactly, but that I come from a friend who I really love.
Okay.
So that's great quality.
You're like counting the paintings that weren't a gift but come from a friend as a gift.
I'm agreeing with you that
we're clearly not a gift.
Consumerism is rampant and bad.
You have
objects that are imbued with personal affection.
You're looking at the best of the best gifts. That's the problem. The gifts that remain in sight to you represent the top 1% of the gifts that you've received in your lifetime. How many birthdays, Christmases, anniversaries, etc. have you had in your lifetime? A total of 100, and you've been able to narrow it down to the best 5 that you could see here. So, and they're great gifts. They're all from thoughtful people. But really, what does that tell you? It tells me that 90% of the gifts you've gotten are in the trash, in a closet, been re-gifted.
You're the kind of guy who looks at like a beautiful person and is like, they'll be dead someday. I mean, like, what a way to view the world. Why not look at, one of these
what
good
is,
gifts.
I don't understand how my attitude
about
gifts has
anything
to do with
that. Any one good gift is worth all the wastage of gifts I've gotten through my whole life just to get the one good one.
I disagree. Totally. You can't say, think of all the money and time that people spent on buying you the gifts that you threw away.
That was fueling the economy. All that money and time went effectively.
So did, by the way, the Exxon Valdez oil spill. Are you in favor of that? It was great for the GDP of the United States.
Okay, let's call the debate there.
Why?
Because I think we've had enough.
You always do this.
I think we should keep going.
Okay, make a good point, and you got a fold up shop. You're okay, like,
fine.
Okay, well, that's a great
point.
So we're done.
Okay, fine. You want to keep going? I don't measure the economy. GDP is a bad measurement. I agree.
Okay,
but what I'm talking about is
when somebody bought
me a Star Wars figure when I was 7 years old, that money went to people who were working in a factory at Hasbro or wherever and making this product. It went to the creators of the series.
Whether I
still have it anymore or not doesn't matter.
I guess that's
that
true.
That energy and time and money was spread effectively into the economy in a positive way.
It wasn't a positive way. It was a totally wasteful way. That money would have been better spent on other resources that would have actually had some good for someone. Let me bring up another point about a non-economic side of gifts, which is the stress involved. People don't talk about this, but there is a tremendous amount
of stress and pressure on gift giving.
There's also stress and pressure. There's stress and pressure when you try and run a marathon. There's stress and pressure when you play a football game. But the value at the end is worth the investment.
Very rarely. Oftentimes you give a gift to someone and they kind of like it, or they return it and you screwed up, or you got the wrong thing.
It's very rare that two people exchange a gift and the parties leave unhappy. They're more likely to leave happy.
Yes, but...
So it's a generator of happiness.
I actually don't think that that's the case, because there's so many gifts that need to be, like, there's gifts, the totality of gifts includes gifts that, like, bosses are giving to their employers, and employers are giving to their bosses, and people are buying for their, like, distant relatives, and people are buying for, like, newborn babies, and no parent is ever going to say, like, God damn it, we don't need another friggin' little jumpsuit when they get their 10th jumpsuit, but that happens all the time.
Sure, but the parents think, oh, we don't need another jumpsuit, but they also think, oh, Dan gave us a jumpsuit, that was nice of him, that was great. Like, yeah, sure,
I don't think a parent of a newborn child is even really. I think they're thinking like there's shit on the in the diaper and let's just get through the day.
But I think they feel that their bonds with the community are strengthened every time they get a gift.
But the time spent.
That's why we do it.
The time spent,
we've reduced gift getting time to like seconds. You can just go on Amazon, boop, boop, baby, jump,
I disagree
boop.
Because one of your earlier points was that it's the thought that counts. And it takes time to think of a.
I agree. The more thought, the more thought put in, the more likely.
One of the biggest cliches of all time, which is the thought that counts. And it takes time to think. And if. I would rather a friend of mine took the time that he was going to put into thinking about and buying, if I just had a baby, let's say, I would rather he put that time into coming over and meeting the baby and just, or just engaging with him on a random Saturday than going online.
Can I argue
online.
That is a gift? That is a way of giving a gift of time.
No, you can't argue that that. Why you not? Can argue that that is a gift, but
sure
I would.
Can.
Sure, you can argue anything you want. You can say that like curing cancer is a gift, but I would say that like we have a common understanding of what the word gift means, and if for the purposes of this argument, we're agreeing that it means like a tangible good that you can give to someone else, or maybe at the outskirts of the definition, a donation on someone's behalf to a charity or something like that. But I don't think that we can say that time is a gift, because I think that that's stretching the limits of the word.
Okay.
Are we done now?
I think so. I'm tired.
Do you want to close it out, or do you want to do a closing statement?
I'll close
statement?
It out if you'd like me to.
Yeah, let's have a closing statement.
Gifts are most often both a burden on the person who is buying them and at best a pleasant experience for the recipient, but most often... Here's another point that I hadn't thought of. New point coming up in the closing argument. I always feel uncomfortable receiving gifts. I don't want gifts. It makes me feel beholden to someone. The best case scenario is that I go like, oh man, that was like, this is a really thoughtful gift. I'm going to put this in my home, but it also makes me feel guilty about all of the gifts that I didn't buy for people when they got married, etc. Now you can say like, well, Dave, that's on you. You're a bad person. I don't know. I have a feeling that a lot of people feel this way too, that the feeling of like receiving a gift, again, it's not a priority for me. It's not one of my main love languages. So the idea of giving and receiving gifts, I understand that to other people it's very important, or at least somewhat important, but to me it's not. And for those reasons, it stresses me out and I don't like it.
When you hear the word gift, it's a beautiful word and you love to hear it. It's one of the most beautiful positive words in the English language, and we use it in such a way that can encompass all kinds of value and somebody giving you something, thoughtless gift. Now, if I can close out by introducing yet another cliche, which is maybe Dave's right and it's better to give than receive. But even then, gifts are good because they draw out some thought for the other person. And it might be that what we call stress is actually like some work and energy of thinking about someone you really love and care about as you select and do the work of giving them a gift.
That was an excellent debate.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you.
I was very moved by that debate. Now, here's what I have to say about it.
Okay.
Healy, I feel like when I look around my house, I see the gifts that people have given me over the years, and I think I would be a different person without them, or certainly my day-to-day would be different without those things, and they're very special to me. But Davis had this sort of soul-crushing idea of the totality of gifts, which really brought me down and made me feel like what a drag it all is.
Yeah, they're all in landfills.
Okay, here's my thing.
Sorry.
Because I started out believing that gifts are good,
yeah.
For Davis to make that much of a cut into my beliefs, I think he gets to win.
Is it possible? Now, I don't concede that there is a moderator bias, but I think Dan, in like his enjoyment of the debate is usually, I think he enjoys the debate. So he's happier after the debate than he was before it. So it may be cause a slight bias towards the positive side.
It's which possible. That's totally true.
Yeah. Interesting.
Anyway, I like giving the gift of this show to our listeners.
So do I. Well, on that note, I think I'm going to close out this holiday season episode of The Great Debates. And hopefully we can regroup sometime in the future to give yet another gift to our listeners.
Hmm. And happy give us Christmas the gift Day of tops and emails and responses and pictures of Mrs. Claus. Mm-hmm. GreatDebate69 at Gmail, on Twitter.
We're everywhere.
We're everywhere.
Okay, guys, we'll see you soon. Give me something good. Give me something good. Give me something. Give me something good. Give me something good. Give me something good. The Great Debates is produced by Mark Caracello. The theme song was composed by Christopher Knight. The debaters are Steve Healy and Dave King, and the podcast is moderated by Dan Medina.